When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show.
Hey, Money Nerds, have you ever watched those HGTV shows and you see people flipping houses and it just seems like a happy mix of chaotic energy and also satisfaction? That is like always the feeling I get whenever I watch those shows. But I will say, as a whole, I have been very scared of flipping houses because it seems like a very scary thing. You open up walls, you don't know what you're going to find. So that has never really resonated with me personally. Now, I respect the heck out of people that can do that. It's just something that has always really intimidated me. But that's why I was so excited to chat with Stephanie Coy today. Stephanie coaches people on how to fast track their savings and retirement by flipping mobile homes in trailer parks. As a previous stay-at-home mom with zero background in construction, flipping houses, or mobile homes, she's used her own experience by trial and error to hone her craft and show others how you can get started in this profitable and low-budget investing niche. I really enjoyed this conversation. We talk a lot about how Stephanie got into mobile home flipping herself, a little bit more about the renovation scope and timeline of her first mobile home property and what that looked like. We, of course, talk about renovation timelines and how those differ from traditional homes or traditional flips that we might see. Challenges faced when hiring and working with contractors as a beginner. She has some really good tips to help you navigate that process. Improving the property without over improving the property. This is especially important, especially when it comes to mobile homes. And then we talk a little bit about how to finance and fund these types of flips. I really enjoyed this conversation. I think it is so fascinating and so interesting. And I walked away feeling very inspired by Stephanie and just reminding myself that there is like a million and one ways to make money. And I really appreciated this unique take on how Stephanie is doing this in her own life. Remember, this podcast is all centered around finding what works for others and trying to distill that down into very actionable bite-sized steps that we can maybe pursue in our own life. So if this is something that's interesting to you, I would highly encourage you to go over to Stephanie's Instagram. It's linked in the show notes, but it is the Mobile Home Investor. And just check out some of her flips. I think it's really fun to see the process and really exciting to see how she approaches this. And she's very open and honest about revenue and expenses and all of that kind of stuff on her Instagram too. So if you're curious, then head over there or click the link in the show notes. All right, let's go ahead and turn the mic over to my friend Stephanie. Stephanie, thank you so much for hanging out. I am so excited that you're here, and I'm more excited that we live in the same town and you're amazing. So thanks for hanging out.
Thank you so much for having me. I so appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to just talk to your audience.
Oh, heck yeah. Well, when I first came across you, we were talking before hitting record. I don't remember my exact entry point into your Instagram, but you have such a unique take on real estate investing. So I want to talk a little bit about that. What was your draw to real estate investing in general?
In general, I started down the path of real estate investing because I am a realtor. I do have my license, and I was really interested in investing for passive income because being a real estate agent is really just like having another job. And I really wanted to be my own boss. I wanted to, you know, have control over my time, and being a real estate agent is not it. You are on your client's timeline all the time. So I was looking into real estate investing just as like, you know, a way to grow my savings account, my retirement account. My husband and I kind of started late in life with our retirement. And so we just didn't really have a lot. So it was kind of like playing catch up.
Mm. Yeah. When you were getting into real estate at first, was that exactly what you thought it would be? Or was it a lot more paperwork? Was it like, what did you expect real estate to be? And then what was the reality when you got into it?
I thought it was going to be that I was going to have my own business. I was going to have control over my time. I was definitely drawn to it for those reasons. And I am an entrepreneur at heart, but it was much more, it's very, very competitive where we live and just very difficult to kind of make your way and pave a path for yourself that makes you stand out as an agent. And so it was, you know, all of the appeal of having my own business was there. It just didn't quite land the way that I wanted it to.
I think that's very true for a lot of people where you get into something like, oh crap, that wasn't quite what I expected.
Exactly.
When did you, okay, so you got into this whole market of fixing and flipping mobile homes, which is
yes.
So niche. Did you start with like regular single family traditional homes, or did you immediately jump into mobile homes? And what was that entry point there?
Yeah, I immediately started in mobile homes. It was just really I stumbled upon it because I was looking into real estate investing. I was looking into flipping mm-hmm. houses, and I thought, what a great, you know, great way to just grow our retirement exponentially. You know, it's just a really good way to fast track what we had in savings at the time, which was very, very little. And so when I started looking into flipping houses, I ran across the idea of mobile homes. Mm-hmm. And as a real estate agent, I had zero interest in mobile homes because they are a total pain in the butt and nobody wants to deal with them. And I quickly found out that there's this underserved and overlooked little corner of the market that is affordable housing. And so it was just kind of in my deep diving real estate flipping that I came across mobile homes.
I like that you mentioned that they are kind of something a lot of agents don't touch on. My mom for a few years was dabbling in real estate, and a couple of her first properties that she was a listing agent for and a buyer's agent as well was a mobile home. And there is so much, I had no idea like how much stuff can go into that. It was really fascinating. But what I was most interested in is the affordability piece. So when you were finding these properties, were you looking at like mobile homes that were full price properties? Like, were you looking for a screaming deal? Like, how did you even know like what was a good deal with a mobile home?
At first, I really kind of trudged my way through and just tried to figure it out. I had a coach and mentor who helped me in the beginning, and his strategy was not necessarily flipping, though. And so I kind of created a sub-niche of mobile homes. His angle was more in buying and holding and doing seller financing for mobile homes, which is another strategy with mobile homes. And I have done that, but I found that I liked the flipping, the get in, the get out. And so that was, you know, my initial, so I did have his support. I had his help. And so he helped me through my first few deals. My first deal he helped me with. And then he helped me kind of analyze the deals. Like, is this a good deal? Is this not a good deal? So I had a lot of input in the beginning.
Tell us about your first property. Like, what did it look like when you first got it? Were you scared to death? Was it exciting? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah, it was super scary. I actually had been on the hunt for a deal for about 2 to 3 months before I actually got this deal. And I had been putting bandit signs in the ground. And I don't know if you know what a bandit sign is, but in the investor world, it's those little handwritten signs that say, "We buy homes, you know, cash," and then your phone number. And that is what I was doing. And they were handwritten signs that say, "We buy mobile homes." And so I was putting them all around town, and the seller contacted me from one of those signs. And so I made a deal with her. I bought the home for $5,000, and it was just a total junker. And I thought, and I actually had no idea what to do with it. Like, I bought it because I was like, I'm sure there's an opportunity here, and I'm not sure what it is. And it actually took me 2 months to decide what I was even going to do with it. And because I was like, I was frozen in place, and I didn't know what to do with this thing. It was a great deal. So I'm like, I can't go wrong here. No matter what I do with it, whatever my exit strategy is.
That's so true. I mean, $5,000, that's insane. Like, I think people hear that and they're like, I can't find anything for less than even $150,000. And so that first property, like, how much work did you have to put into it? How much money? Like, what did that look like? Was it a ton or not too bad?
No, actually, it was the best deal I've done to date, because as far as return on investment. So what I did was I decided I wanted to sell it on payments, because I got it for such a low amount, I could ask for a down payment and then let somebody move in and then basically make me payments and also pay lot rent to the park. And so, because these are not on owned land, they're on leased land. So that was my exit strategy, and I didn't do anything to it. I cleaned it from top to bottom, made sure it was clean. It was totally livable. It was just like funky paint colors and outdated, you know, fixtures and cabinets and stuff like that. But the person that ended up buying it that I put in there, she was so happy to own something that was hers. Even though she was paying lot rent, the home was still hers. And so it was a win-win situation. I ended up really not putting anything into it other than about 2 months of lot rent, because I sat on it not knowing what to do with it. And then got her in there, and she made payments for about 4 years and then paid it off. And I made a crazy return on investment.
What? That's wild. When people hear that, I think sometimes, well, first and foremost, we'll start with the signs. I'm fascinated by these. I know they have to work, because obviously people wouldn't do it if it never worked. Mm-hmm. I've got to know too, like, when you're doing something like that, where it's just kind of like essentially cold outreach, what's the expectation? Like, what percentage of people to, like, actually reach out? Like, is it even something you can track, or is it just like, we got 4 leads from this, it was a success? Like, how do you even measure success for that?
Yeah, it's really hard to track, because, you know, I know how many signs I have out, but it's hard to measure, like, traffic flow and how many people actually see the sign versus how many people call, you know, and so I do get a lot of calls that are not really something I'm interested in. So I've kind of learned a process of pre-screening people on the phone, just because I don't know if this is even something I'm remotely interested in. So kind of getting those initial questions off the table first helps me to determine, do I even want to go look at it? I don't want to waste their time or waste my time. But yeah, it is kind of hard to track.
I could imagine so. I always get those, "Do you want to sell your house?" texts. And I'm like, no, no, I don't. But I'm always like, it's got to work. Like, it has to work. So that's really interesting.
Exactly. For the motivated buyer. And I have gotten other homes that way. So, you know, it does work.
Mm-hmm. That is fascinating. Okay. So once you find a house that you are interested in, what's your process? Like, is this a month turnaround time? Is it a year turnaround time? Like, how quickly are you going in there, fixing the place up and listing it?
It's usually about 4 to 6 weeks. Sometimes if it's a full rehab and the home is bigger, it could be 2 to 3 months. But usually, I mean, I think, you know, 3 months would be would be a little bit, you know, that would be at the, you know, latest, I think, for most of my flips. So I try to get in and get out as fast as possible, but it just depends on how much has to be done. Cause I will do everything from a, you know, really light rehab. It just needs a little bit of paint and flooring to like everything needs to be overhauled.
When you say everything, I don't really know too much about mobile homes and how that would compare to like a traditional home. What's like the extent of what that would look like? Is it replacing exterior walls? Like, is that like, paint me a picture there.
Not usually. I have one that I just completed and I bought it down to the studs. And so it's probably one of my best, most recent examples of a mobile home that I've renovated from absolute scratch. And so we literally bought it. I bought it for $10,000 and it was, like I said, down to the studs, mm-hmm. Nothing was done. Everything was completely, you know, completely gutted. So we got in there, had to do drywall. We had to do subfloor repair. We had to, you know, everything. And it was about a 6 to 8 week project. So even it wasn't too bad. So on something like that, you know, we're doing everything. We're replacing the flooring. We're doing the cabinets and countertops and new lighting. And in this example, it was, you know, drywall, insulation even. Didn't need to do much to, well, some of the air, yeah, no, we did need to do some ceiling work. We did have to redo some siding. Some of the siding was bad. It had to replace that. So yeah, it kind of, I mean, it can be, that would be like a full renovation. And then does it have, you know, an air conditioning unit? And do we decide to put that in? Does it need a new furnace? You know, do we decide to replace that? Do we, you know, does it need a new water heater? You know, those kind of big ticket items. How is the roof? So we have to assess all of those things. And they're pretty similar to a regular home, but in as far as rehab goes, but the bones of it are different. And so you will have, because of the construction material, how they're built is with thinner materials. They're just built with different materials and they're sitting on blocks. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're not on foundation when they're in a mobile home park. So because they're on blocks, there's lots of settling that happens. There's unevenness that happens. They, you know, sometimes the flooring is completely not level. So we have to do a lot of prep on the flooring. You know, sometimes there's the roofs are different than a stick built home. Usually they're not shingles. Sometimes they are if they're a little bit newer, but a lot of times we're working with different materials there. So there's a lot of differences, but there's also a lot of similarities. So it's just kind of, and what I've found is the biggest difference in mobile homes is how they're maintained. And if they aren't maintained, which most of them aren't, it's like a car. Like if you don't get your oil changed, if you don't get your tires changed, if you don't get your brakes done, you are going to notice. And that's the same with a mobile home. You will notice if you don't maintain the roof, if you don't seal up the windows regularly, if you don't, you know, any bit of water intrusion is going to completely wreak havoc on a mobile home. So a little bit different there in the, like the problems that we have to address.
I would imagine too, that you probably have a pretty good eye when you're looking at properties of like the things to look out for and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm kind of curious, like from your background, how, like, have you always been a handy person? Is this something that you just like, no?
Not at all. So this is where I'm like, if I can do this, anyone can do this. And this is why I love to teach people and show people how to do this, even if they have zero background doing it, because I had no construction background. I've never even rehabbed my own home. Like my own home has never undergone anything like this. So I didn't know anything. So I learned a lot, obviously, in my first few flips. But once I found a couple of really good contractors and they have educated me along the way too, and I have total confidence in them. So I feel like that has helped me a lot to gain confidence. And so I'm teaching my students now to be able to find a contractor to begin with before you even get your first property, which is not what I did. I bought my first home and then I found the contractor and I had to muddle my way through that whole process. But I think it's the most helpful if you can find some contractors to help you out in the beginning.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Okay, hear me out. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet. So for me, this was my debit card. But what I realized is that I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. And now I've got a card with more miles and more upgrades, and I truly love it. Right now, I'm not doing too much traveling, but I am collecting all of those points so that I can hopefully take a really sweet vacation in the very near future. But I gotta know, what could future you do with more travel rewards? Would you do a hotel upgrade? Would you do lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. With all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms do apply. If you are a garden lover, you've got to listen up. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, from fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. I ordered a couple plants. I know I've talked about them a few times on this podcast. I have some peaches and cream, honeysuckle vines, and an English ivy vine for the flower pot, and they are coming along so well. If you haven't been following along on Instagram, you're going to see them being planted, and I think it'll take a couple of years before they really get to the level that I want where they drape over the flower pot, but they are so cool. Now, here's the cool thing too. This spring, they have the best deals online with up to half off select plants and other deals, and listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using code MONEYNERDS at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code MONEYNERDS at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code MONEYNERDS. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. I'm sure you have some really good tips, but for somebody who's new to hiring contractors and working with them, how do you personally like begin vetting people to see if they're going to be a good fit, if they're going to be good people to work with? Like, what are you looking for?
I really love to, first of all, getting a good reference, recommendation for a contractor. And I recommend that people go to different real estate investor meetings where they can meet other real estate investors, because they for sure have contractors in their back pocket, as well as realtors. And if they can't go to a meeting, then go to a Facebook group. Most local areas have a Facebook group where they can, you know, tap into that and get some recommendations for contractors. So I start there, and then I have them go through, once they get a contractor on the phone, asking them some basic questions, but open-ended questions about how they would handle certain issues, and kind of walk them through, like, walk me through what, you know, what your process is for doing flooring. Walk me through your process for how do you take care of retexturing walls? What are you good at in all of those different areas? Because some contractors are not good at everything. Most aren't. Most have certain areas that they are, you know, better at than other things. So kind of going through and asking them those questions. And I really like to kind of, I don't know, my feeling with contractors is I want them to be like, oh yeah, that's not a problem. I can totally do that. Yes. You don't want a contractor to be like, oh,
trying to talk you out of it.
That's, yeah. And I have had that. And I've had students who've had that, where they have had a contractor they thought was a winner. And then they get in there and they start complaining about the job. or they start complaining about, you know, I don't know how I'm going to fix this. And that's, you know, red flag.
Yes. Yes.
Red flag from the beginning. And I like to have people be able to have their contractors do a small job before they do an entire renovation. And this enables people to see how I'm going to work with this contractor. How does this contractor tackle problems? So have them do just a bathroom remodel, or have them do just flooring or just paint. And that allows you to get a feel for their communication. How do they handle things when, you know, when you've got something that has to, you know, change, you know, you've got a change order and you're like, oh, well, they didn't have this material. I thought they might, you know, just that kind of thing. So how do they handle it? And then how do you work together?
That's so dang smart. I could imagine if you don't do that work, and for you, your projects are fairly quick turnaround time. So you don't really have a lot of time to waste when it comes to that. It's like, here's my deadline, let's get it done. So if you have somebody that's just dragging their feet or isn't very motivated or is trying to like talk you out of things when you have a very clear vision of what you want it to look like, I could see that being such a pain in the ass.
Exactly. And I want somebody who's going to be able to like, tell me what's your recommendation for this? You know, I have an idea. Is this possible? Mm-hmm. You know, are we going to be able to do this, or am I totally in left field? And if it's not possible, what else could be possible? What can we do to fix this?
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost that solution oriented mindset is so hard to find sometimes too. When you were initially getting your contractors, did you run into any issues where they were like, well, we only work with developers on 20 different houses. We're not interested in doing a couple here and there. Like, did you have any issues with that in the very beginning?
I didn't. No, I was, I found most contractors are, you know, they're willing to go bid a job. And so I would meet a lot of, I would get the job or get the deal. And then I would start interviewing contractors. And I found that most people would show up, be willing, you know, to at least show up. I mean, that's the first thing. Do they show up?
Do they answer the phone? Do they show up?
So basics. It's basics, but you would be so surprised.
We just got done with a big project on a pretty unique build, and I was cracking up over, you're kind of right. Like, I relate to so much of what you say with how are they approaching this? Like, what's their problem solution mindset? You know, what are they going to bring to the table? Are they going to talk you out of it? And I think about 20 contractors try to talk me out of my idea. And I'm like, well, this isn't going to work, guys. Like, it's going forward. And it was so interesting because it's like, thank you for not wasting my time. Like, now we know this isn't going to work out for either one of us. But it's even like getting them to even show up was really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you would think that's just a basic.
It's not.
Right. Yes. I mean, at the very, you know, I mean, I think that there should be more to your standard, your plumb line, than just do you show up and do you show up on time, right?
It's true.
I mean, there's a vetting process. And, you know, among other things, I do like to call references. Mm. I do like to ask those references. Did they show up on time? Did they complete the job in the time that they told you they were going to? Did they come in underbid, or was it way over? You know, just those kinds of questions. So I do actually do that, and I recommend everybody do that.
That's so smart. Okay. So once you get into a property, I can imagine like redesigning it's the fun part. How do you reel yourself back so you don't go too crazy with improvements?
Well, I mean, that is a really good question, because with mobile homes, it's really, really important not to overimprove, because it's, you know, you've got to dial in your materials and stay on budget, because if you don't, you could find yourself putting in quartz countertops, and mobile home buyers you're not going to get the money back out. if you do that. So of course they'd love quartz countertops, but you're not going to be, you can't just jack up the price of a mobile home just because you've put in quartz countertops, you know, the market can bear what it can bear. So staying on budget is super, super important. And I've kind of dialed it into the materials that I like to use. And really there's not as much creativity with a mobile home because they are a big rectangle box. And there's really only so much you can do. I have knocked down walls and I've taken out cabinets and things like that. But otherwise, it's usually just working with the space that we have and just improving that space.
Okay. And then what's a good amount of time? Like how long do you typically hold a property for? Is it something that generally will sell within 3 months? Is it a little bit longer, shorter? What do you find is normal?
No, it depends kind of like with the rest of the market. It kind of depends on the time of year. Winter time is tough because things just, you know, holidays are tough. Snow is tough. So those kind of factors do play in. But so normally the market for mobile home buyers is a smaller market. So things do tend to stay on the market longer than their, you know, stick built single family home counterparts. Mm-hmm. So even in a really hot market, when the market in our area was super hot, stuff was not staying on the shelf for more than a minute, you know, I was selling really quickly, but now that it's kind of flattened out just a little bit, it's still, you know,
it's still crazy.
Still a pretty hot market. Yeah. but for mobile homes, it is a different market. Your buyer pool is just different. You've got a smaller buyer pool. So you've got only a small amount of buyers want to pay cash, usually cash, for a mobile home in a park. They don't own the land. And granted, it's a much better deal as far as the amount of money they're spending, but they don't own the land and they have to pay lot rent. So it's like this hybrid form of home ownership for people. Mm-hmm. And that is a smaller buyer pool.
It's so true. This has been so interesting. I feel like I'm learning a ton and could ask you 5 kajillion questions. I've got to know for your own investing strategy. It looks like you're having a heck of a time with this and it's really fun to watch. What do you foresee your investing strategy being in the future? Like, do you want to own your own park? Like what are you working on?
Yeah, I would love to own my own park. Probably not here locally because land is extremely expensive. Yeah. I am on a couple of Facebook groups that are mobile home park related, mobile home park investing. So I'm kind of every now and then, you know, peeking at what they're doing and stuff like that. So yeah, I would love to do that. I would love to get into more single family and multifamily investments too. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, the mobile homes just seem to be my sweet spot. And I've just kind of landed here and it's hard to imagine, you know, doing anything, you know, the flip side of things is very, very profitable when it comes to mobile homes. And so I just can't see myself flipping a single family home. I might do more like long-term hold or even Airbnb situations too is kind of fascinating to me as well. So, but those are different systems. Those are different, you know, you've got to dial that in. So I heard somebody say recently, like really get good at what you're good at and then go ahead and kind of branch out. And it's really easy in the investor world to get pulled away by the shiny object syndrome. Like we all just go, oh, what about that? You know, what about this idea? That's a great idea. You know, there's land flipping. There's so many things that you can do with real estate investing. And so I just really liked that, like really get good at what you're at one thing and then branch out into other things. And so, yeah, I'm kind of sticking with the mobile homes for now. Cause like I said, they're profitable and I love them.
They look so fun. Like I have to stay in my own lane. I am very much like unique Airbnbs. That's my jam. But every time I see your content, I'm like, that looks so fun though. I'm like, no, Whitney, you're not allowed. But I love it. I think you make it look, I don't want to say easy, but you are good at what you do. So it does appear to the outside world probably easier than it actually is. So I have to give you props. I think that's how you can always tell who's good at their job, is if they make it look easy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It isn't easy. I think that, you know, now that I've been doing it for so long, the difficulties and the challenges that do come with every single deal, those I'm able to roll with the punches a lot more. You know, when my contractor calls me and says, okay, so we have a problem, you know, I don't immediately freak out.
Right.
Like, okay, tell me what the problem is and then we'll tackle it. And so I think that just having that little bit of experience, you know, under your belt helps a lot to make it look a little bit easier than it actually is, especially in the beginning.
Yeah. When you had your first flip, did you say that was your most profitable one so far?
As far as ROI, yes. My return on investment was, I think it was like a 750% return on investment.
Stephanie, that's amazing.
It was ridiculous because over time, you know, that was over the course of 4 years. Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't an immediate, but yeah, that was the most profitable, but I didn't like, and I still don't, really love mobile homes as far as a long-term investment because it is great cash flow if you can get the deal right. But you're not gaining equity when it's a mobile home in a park. And if it's a mobile home on land, that's going to be different. Mm-hmm. The mobile home's in a park because you don't own the land. It's not attached to the land. And so the equity play that a lot of people have with real estate investing isn't there. So I personally like it just for the flip opportunity.
It makes sense. I mean, I see where you're coming from for sure. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the whole process of financing the flip and all of that kind of stuff, how do you find most people get into that? Is it hard money loans? Is it your own pocket? Like what is pretty typical for mobile home flipping?
I have a HELOC, a home equity line of credit on my own home. And so that's how I started. And I just took out my HELOC and decided to put it to work because it was just there and available. If you've got equity, you might as well do something with it. So right now I'm partnering with a couple of people that are actually doing that with their HELOC. So they're wanting to start mobile home investing. And so we're working together locally on some deals. But yeah, I mean, that's a great way to get started if you don't have a ton of cash. But most of my flip now are funded either with my own money or I also use private money lenders. And that is something that I have kind of curated this list of lenders that are out there. There's a lot of people out there that just have money. They want it to be passive. They want nothing to do with the deal. They just want to get a nice return in 3 to 6 months. So I use a lot of private money. And it's not hard money. Private money is really more like a personal loan. That's it.
Oh, okay.
It's a promissory note between me and the lender. And sometimes they want to be on the title with me. Sometimes they don't. The promissory note is all they want. But I mean, there's a lot of strategies as far as forming those relationships with people. And there's plenty of people out there that are, if you have a deal, they are there to lend you money.
I know people listening are like, well, okay, but how do I find these people? I think I know the answer, but how did you initially cultivate that list?
A lot of networking. So it was a lot of networking and I found, and through referrals, I've gotten several of them through my dad who lives in Montana.
Go dad.
He's one of my biggest fans, which is so cool. And he's a financial advisor and deals, you know, in that realm. And so he has sent a few people my way saying, you might be interested in what my daughter's doing. And so I've gotten people that way. I've gotten lenders just from talking to people and saying, who wants to lend money? I'll go to a real estate investor meetup and I'll say, hey, I've got a deal. Anybody want to lend money on it? I need 20 grand. And they're like, mm-hmm. I'm in. So like That's there's, amazing. Yeah, you just have to ask. And I think that was, I didn't even know that was a thing until I needed the money for a rehab that was a lot more than I had and what I was, and it was a bigger, it was a much bigger job, and I needed $40,000. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to get $40,000. I don't have it. A lot of cash. And I didn't have it. And but I had the deal. The numbers were there. And so I just asked someone that I knew. I was like, do you know anybody that would want to lend? And he's like, oh yeah, let me put you in touch with this guy. And now this one lender I've done probably a half a dozen deals with at maybe more at this point. I mean, he's been my go-to. So
that's amazing. When you're working with private lenders and individuals, is it an interest rate that you pay them? Is it a percentage of the profit? Like, how do you generally structure that?
It's usually, I just do a percentage at the end when it sells.
Yeah.
So if they lend me $20,000, I will give them, it'll be somewhere between 10 and 12% interest. Mm-hmm. And it's just a balloon payment at the end. It's just a flat rate. And so if they lent me $20,000, then I'll give them 22 when we're done.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Like,
I love this so much. I definitely am glad I connected with you, and I probably will have you back on the show to see where you're at in all of your updates and stuff, because I think it's such a fun way to go for anybody listening and that is kind of interested in this and wants to see more behind the scenes. Where should they go to learn more about your process and a little bit more about you?
Yeah, I mean, you can follow me on Instagram. I am at The Mobile Home Investor, and I post a lot of content. I'm always on stories, usually posting about my jobs. And if you want to look at my past projects that I've worked on and my highlights, I have them all there by name because I name all my homes. So
it is so entertaining too. And I also have to give you props for sharing the detail behind the numbers. Like, you're very transparent about that. I think it's so fun to see how much money can actually be made from doing something like this and how life-changing it can be if you're willing to take it on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. And it is fun. It is fun. And once you learn the ropes, it's great fun. Yeah.
I think it's amazing. Stephanie, before we officially part ways, are you down for some rapid fire questions?
Totally.
All right. My first question for you, where's one location you're dying to travel to?
Italy is on my list. That is in Greece too, but you know, pretty much all of Italy I want to see.
And all the pasta and the wine. Can't go wrong.
I don't know about the pasta. The pasta might just, yeah, but the wine for sure.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. My next question for you. What is one book you find yourself gifting or recommending to others most often?
That's a great question. I have so many books I like. I feel like one that I gift a lot is You're a Badass at Making Money. Have you read that one?
It's been a while.
Yeah. It's been a while for me actually too. I might have to pick that back up and reread it, but I have given it out a lot and recommended it a lot because it did kind of change my perception of money and some of the old beliefs I had about it.
I think it's a good one for that too, for sure. I could definitely see how that would impact your real estate investing journey too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just understand, you know, it's a mindset book, you know. And I love anything that's a mindset book.
Me too. They're the best.
Yeah. Nice.
Okay. My next question for you. What's one purchase you recently made that has made your life better?
Mobile homes.
You're like, done.
My last mobile home. I just bought it.
What did you name it?
Matilda.
Cute.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a cute one. I haven't even started. So if you're listening to this, you want to see like a project from beginning to end, like the Matilda, look for any of my posts that have Matilda in them. Cause that'll be, that's my next one.
That's amazing. Okay. My last question for you, in your opinion, what is the secret to financial success?
No, I don't know, because I don't often think of myself as being as successful as I don't know. We're all in a process, right? But I feel like, I mean, for me, just understanding that we all have, I heard somebody describe this recently and I loved this. She said, we all have basically an escrow account and the money is just there waiting for you to claim it. And we all have it. We all have this escrow account and it's just sort of waiting. And if we can tap into that and just get ourselves a piece of that, like I love thinking about it like that. So I guess my answer to that is just the mindset shift of, you know, understanding that there is a plenty of money out there. And so carving for yourself just a little piece of that pie or as much of that pie as you want is really all in your brain and the thoughts that you have about that. So that's why I like the mindset books because they address all that.
That's amazing. Stephanie, it was so fun learning from you. I have really enjoyed getting to know you more and hearing more about your process and how you're making your own path in this real estate investing world. I think it's very inspirational. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Whitney. It was really fun.
Wasn't that so interesting? I personally really loved the conversation about not over improving the properties. That was something that I could see myself getting into trouble with. So I really appreciated that reminder. Okay, I would love to hear from you. Head over to Instagram. I'm Whitney_Hansen_co. And let me know what your takeaways were and just say hi. Always love connecting with you and seeing who's listening in. All right, that is it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I will see you on Friday for 5 Tip Friday or next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.